This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It is Law and Behold. And recently, a lawyer sought to pursue a challenge on the constitutionality of the existence of vernacular schools. So in a motion filed on October 23rd this year, he sought a declaration from the federal court that was unconstitutional for Parliament to pass an amendment to Section 17 and 28 of the Education Act 1996, providing for the continued existence of vernacular schools. So are the existence of vernacular schools unconstitutional? I'm about to get the 411 on this with Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Shad Salim Farooqi, who is a Professor of Constitutional Law at the University of Malaya. Welcome, Prof. How are you today?
Thank you very much, Juliet, and hello to all your listeners.
So in that case that I just mentioned earlier, I mean, could you help explain it to us? I know that the federal court dismissed the application, right, to grant that lawyer, Muhammad Khairul Azam Abdul Aziz. So he was seeking a declaration that an amendment to the Education Act 1996 allowed the continued existence of vernacular schools. And he said that is unconstitutional. Could you help unpack that for us?
Yes, I think it's a very important case. And any student of constitutional law should show interest in it. Let's jot down some of the salient issues. First of all, we have a supreme constitution, and therefore Parliament is not supreme, and all laws of Parliament, including the Education Act or the National Language Act, have to comply with the dictates of the constitution. The constitution is very clear that the Malay language is the official language of the country.
Okay.
And that being so, it should be used for all official purposes. Now, that raises the question as to what is official. Official is defined actually in Article 152, Clause 6. And Article 152, Clause 6 says, official purpose means any purpose of the federal or state government or of a public authority.
Okay.
Now, public authority in turn is defined in Article 160, Clause 2. And the definition is that public authority refers to the king, the rulers, the federal and state governments, local authorities, statutory authorities, courts or tribunals. In addition to the definition in the Constitution, there is the Merdeka University case.
Mm-hmm.
The Merdeka University case says that, a Merdeka University case of 1982,
okay,
it says that all universities, whether public or private, are also public authorities because they are established under the Universities and University Colleges Act.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing is this, Juliet, that neither the Merdeka University case nor Article 152, the constitutional article, say anything about primary and secondary schools. So the million ringgit question is whether a primary or secondary school is also a public authority where Bahasa Melayu must be used for official purposes.
Right.
I think that issue is best determined in the courts, and it will probably be litigated. So to me, that's another very important issue. Universities are public authorities because they are established under Universities, University Colleges Act, but are schools, kindergartens, nurseries, nurseries, kindergartens, primary, secondary schools, some of them public, some of them private, are they also part of the definition of a public authority? Now, it is arguable that they are not, because neither Article 152 nor does the Merdeka University case say anything about primary, secondary education.
Mm-hmm.
However, even if they are part of a public authority, I wish to humbly point out to all your listeners that the Constitution was drafted in 1957 and in 1963. It was amended significantly to accommodate the dazzling diversity of this nation.
Right.
I think more than most other constitutions in Asia and Africa, our constitution makers walked the middle path.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to accommodate linguistic, religious, cultural diversity. And My humble submission is that the Constitution as it stands permits the government, the federal and the state governments, to permit the use of vernacular and other languages. May I point out to you a few reasons? Number one, Bahasa Melayu is required for official purposes. Mm-hmm. This means that for non-official private purposes, languages other than Bahasa Melayu may be used. Mm-hmm. That's Article 152, Clause 1A. As I mentioned earlier, it's a moot question whether a private kindergarten, a nursery or a primary school that is primarily run on private funds is an official purpose of the government for which BM should be used. Secondly, Article 152, Clause 1A of the Constitution says that no one can be prevented from teaching or learning other languages.
That's right.
Other languages would include not just Chinese and Tamil, but Arabic or Urdu or French or German, as long as 15 kids so require. And this Article 152, Clause 1A has been supplemented by the Education Act, Section 2. The beautiful rule is, if 15 pupils so request, the school must try to provide for a teacher in a vernacular language. Now, this, of course, is about teaching a subject, the language, or learning the language. Mm-hmm. What about medium of instruction?
That's right.
For that, may I point out to you, Article 152, Clause 1B, it says the federal and state governments have the right to preserve and sustain the use and study of any vernacular language. Actually, they don't use the word vernacular. They say language of any community. Now, to me, this is very significant because what better way to preserve, sustain, and use the language of any other community than to provide it as a medium of instruction at primary and secondary level. So it's quite remarkable. Not private parties, the federal and state governments have the right to preserve, sustain, and use and study of any vernacular language. So I think vernacular schools can come under the broad protection of Article 152, Clause 1, Subclause B. Under 152, Clause 1, federal government and state governments have the power to promote these languages. Now, relying on 152, Clause 1B, mm-hmm. many measures have been adopted, many laws have been passed which permit linguistic diversity. And that's where the Education Act, the Private Higher Education Institutions Act 1996 come in. I'll mention more about this whenever you want.
Well, actually, that's what I was going to ask you about, because you've said before that what's important, though, is that even though it's not provided for in the Constitution, it is actually recognized by the Education Act 1996.
Yes. The Constitution and the Education Act do not use specifically the word vernacular, mm-hmm. but the language of other communities, those words are used. Now, in the Education Act 1996, Section 17, it says that the national language shall be the main medium of instruction. It doesn't say sole, it says main. Mm-hmm. In other words, other languages may be used. But many exceptions are allowed. Vernacular schools, they are called national type schools. Remarkable use of terminology. Eh? They are called national type schools. This is Section 28. Under Section 28, actually, vernacular type of schools are allowed. And there is no need for these schools to use Bahasa Melayu as the main medium of instructions. The national language need not be the main medium of instruction in national type vernacular schools established under Section 28. And most remarkably, Section 17, Section 143, they say any other educational institution may be exempted from the minister from this rule that Bahasa Melayu must be the main medium of instruction. Mm-hmm. In other words, some other language can be the main medium, but there is a very good rule. If Bahasa Melayu is not being used as the main medium of instruction, then Bhasha Melayu must be taught as a compulsory subject in the school.
Okay.
And I think that's totally understandable. So the overall picture is this, that because of Article 152's permission to the federal government to promote other languages.
That's right.
Education Act has been passed by Parliament, which allows the minister to set up national type schools where BM may not be the main medium of instruction. And not only in Section 28, Section 17, Section 26, Section 143 allow the minister to exempt any other school. For example, there may be an international school.
Mm-hmm.
And power of the minister is very broad. Kindergartens are exempted under Section 23 of the Education Act. Private educational institutions may be exempted. There are lots of private schools.
Mm-hmm.
For example, again, international schools. There is the Private Higher Education Institutions Act 1996, Section 41, which allows the minister to permit them a fair amount of autonomy. So the overall picture of the Education Act and of the Private Higher Education Institutions Act is that though Bahasa Melayu is the primary means of instruction and education, the minister can provide exemptions. And may I also point out to you, and this is something that the lawyers who took the matter to the court, I think they should be asked to answer. They are so worried about how vernacular languages are diluting the importance of Bahasa Melayu.
Mm.
I wonder why are they not asking about English language also diluting the importance of the national language. Actually, the Constitution is replete, absolutely replete with provisions, lot of provisions permitting the use of Bahasa English. So, you see, our constitution, while recognizing the preeminent and exalted position of Bahasa Melayu, nevertheless acknowledged that the windows of our mind should be open to the world, both in terms of learning English and in terms of promotion of other languages. So there's a little bit of, should I say, hypocrisy involved here, double standards. Their nationalism is deeply affected because vernacular schools exist. Vernacular schools are, in their view, against the Constitution. I would be very interested in finding out if they would say the same thing about universities conducting their entire instruction in English. Is that not also a departure from Article 152 and the Education Act that Bahasa Melayu shall be the main medium of instruction? So I hope that this question will be raised. Article 8, equality before the law. I think the vernacular school should say, why are you singling us out? You must put us in the same category as all other institutions which are not using BM as the main medium of instruction.
I'm speaking today to Emeritus Professor Dr. Shad Salim Faruqi. He's a professor of constitutional law at the University of Malaya. And we're discussing whether vernacular schools in Malaysia are constitutional. And we're going to continue that discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and in the studio with me today is Emeritus Professor Dr. Shad Salim Faruqi. He's a professor of constitutional law at the University of Malaya. And of course, it is our Law and Behold series, and we're discussing whether vernacular schools in Malaysia are constitutional. So, Prof, I mean, the thing is, right, a lot of the calls to abolish vernacular schools is usually wrapped around the argument that they are a hindrance to national unity. I don't know. I know you've spoken about it before. You know, we need to discuss whether they're part of our rich cultural mosaic or are they, as I said, a hindrance to national unity? And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, if vernacular schools are a hindrance to national unity, then surely English-based institutions are an equal, if not a greater, hindrance to national unity.
Mm-hmm.
We must be consistent in principle. I'm prepared to accept this point that for national unity, we need an official language. I'm on board with everyone on this issue. But at the same time, I have to say this, we must be consistent in principle.
Mm-hmm.
If vernacular languages are so much of a hindrance, what about the English language? There are so many universities conducting the instruction in English. There are Mara Junior Science Colleges. There are international schools. And by the way, most of the ministers send their kids to these places. So I'm sure the ministers are deeply concerned, even more than I'm concerned, is it, with national unity.
Yeah.
Where do they send their kids?
Mm-hmm.
When we send our kids on scholarship to study abroad, where do we send them? Do we send them only to the Malay-speaking world, or do we send them to Germany and to France and to England and to the USA? So I think we need to be consistent in principle. Now, coming to the issue of whether vernacular schools are a hindrance to national unity, let me just mention a few things. First of all, I fully agree that national language is necessary for national unity, national identity. It's good to have a language which expresses our deepest, finest thoughts, our emotions, and we can communicate with each other. I acknowledge national language is a necessity also for other reasons, that is efficiency. I think letters to the government department will be answered a little bit faster if they were not in vernacular languages where there's a need for translation and all that. And of course, there's an economic factor. If letters were being received in 10 languages, then of course the ministry will have to have translators. Like what happens in courts of law, things are translated in the interest of justice. Witnesses are allowed to give evidence in vernacular language, and that slows things down. However, I have to also say this, mother tongues or vernacular languages are part of a country's culture, are part of a community's culture, are part of a community's soul. They are part of the community's collective memories.
Mm.
They are part of the community's songs, literature, poetry, and its contribution to civilization. So in that respect, as you put it so well, they are part of our beautiful cultural mosaic. There's a human rights dimension there, Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
We have to allow communities to preserve their language in much the same way we allow them to preserve their dress or their food or their religion. I think we have to allow them to preserve their language. Language is definitely tied up, not only with culture, even with religion.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to allow. I think there is also argument from some educationists, though I'm not in a position to rebut or to put it forward as authoritative. But I've heard arguments that at the very formative stages, nursery, kindergarten, primary, kids learn best if it is in the tongue of their mothers,
right,
their mother tongue, the language they heard while the child was in the womb. So I think there is some justification, psychologically speaking, from the point of view of child psychology, I think, to consider that vernacular languages should be part of our curriculum at the primary level, at the nursery level, kindy level, primary level. Later on, people acquire multiple personalities. They acquire friends from many, many communities. I think then we can nationalize and internationalize, cosmopolitan attitudes can develop. But I think at the early stages, there's a lot to be said for permitting vernacular languages at the formative stages. Now, also, we have to bear this in mind. We are now a global society. Multilingualism is necessary in a global world. It's also actually an intellectually enriching experience to be able to learn more languages. I'm afraid that many of the people who talk in terms of language nationalism, either way, whether they are vernacular language nationalists or they are Malay language nationalists. Many of them actually are not competent in more than one language.
That's right.
If they were, they would understand how beautiful it is to be able to read poetry and literature in more than one language. Language is an extremely enriching thing. It's not just a means of communication.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually an activity of thought, a receptivity to beauty and to humane feeling. And actually, it does a great deal to enrich our lives. So I do not fully agree with this argument that vernacular schools are a hindrance. Much depends on the curriculum. If the curriculum were to emphasize other languages, for example, in a vernacular school, if BM is really strongly taught, if in national schools vernacular languages are strongly taught, I think that would be good. In some countries, for example, in India, a three-language formula is adopted. Hindi is the national language, must be taught.
Yeah.
English is the international language, must be taught. And the state is allowed to promote its own language.
Mm-hmm.
And in India, there are about 26 national languages. So a three-language formula may not be a bad idea. It looks like overburdening. Yes,
yeah.
But it is a burden that would be wonderful to carry from the intellectual point of view. Because actually language is not just, as I said earlier, means of communication. It reflects cultural traits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Language is culture. And I think this enrichment is there.
I think, though, the argument, you know, when people say that these schools need to be abolished is that the attendance of these schools is very much divided almost exclusively, you know, along racial and religious lines. And that sort of artificially separates these different members of key communities, especially in their formative years. I mean, is that something you agree with?
Well, let me say two things. First of all, this discussion of vernacular language and national language, I think we need a balance.
Mm.
Life is about balance. Life is about walking the tightrope between many alternatives. And I think we need a balance. And in my humble view, the Constitution of Malaysia in Article 152, in the Education Act, in the National Language Act, tries beautifully to walk this middle path, something that we seem not to be very aware of. Now, coming to the issue of polarization, we have to ask why this has taken place. The earlier generation of non-Muslims, non-Malays, were happy to send their kids to national schools because national schools were truly national schools. Now, most of the primary, secondary schools have become semi-religious schools.
Mm-hmm.
The latest data I have is this, that in 2018, the so-called national schools had 98% Malay population, 2% non-Malay population. And most interestingly, the vernacular Chinese schools have 82% Chinese population, 18% non-Chinese population. So I have to ask you, Juliet, which is the truly national school today? Not the national schools. I think even our Prime Minister has made this confession that over the years, the national schools have moved to the right in terms of their curriculum, and they have become almost like semi-religious schools. Now, out of 53 periods, 53 divided by half, it's a half-hour period, Pandidikan Islam is 6 hours. Tasme, so recitation of the Quran, is 2. Arabic is 3. That's 11 out of 53. 20.75% of the syllabus is actually connected with religion or with reading of the Al-Quran or with the Arabic language, which surely at the moment is not the language of education or the language of trade and commerce. It is basically the language of the Al-Quran. So now 20.75%. Maths is 11.3%. Science is 7.5%. English is 15%. BM is 15%. So now, I have to ask myself, 20.75% of a religious-related curriculum compared to maths 11.3, science 7.5, English and BM 15. I think there is some lack of balance here. So people are not sending their kids to the national schools. And by the way, it's not only non-Malays. There are Malays who are sending their kids to vernacular schools. I sent one of my daughters, to a Chinese vernacular school. And then when she got married and she had children, she sent both of her children to a Chinese vernacular school because as a father, I want the best for my kid. I will walk on nails or on burning coal if need be to do good for my kids. That's what I thought was best. So I have to beg our educationists, don't look only at the facts, look at the causes. Why are national schools so unacceptable to the non-Malay communities? It's because the education system there has declined and because there is too much emphasis. I'm not against religious teaching. I'm not against it. But the percentages that I gave you, I know someone will question these percentages, but I think these percentages do tell us a lot about what is happening in our education system.
So are you basically saying it needs to be revamped, our education system?
Education system, revamp is a very polite word.
Please tell me the word that you would much rather use.
I think we need fundamental rethinking. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to go very far. We look back to what was there before the 60s, mm-hmm. before the 70s. I think we had a pretty good education system. My wife's family and their parents, her parents and their uncles and aunts and all, I think they were educated in the national schools. They didn't go to England or America. They were much more cosmopolitan in their attitudes than they are today.
So it's basically what's actually happening in our schools today that is pushing people, you're saying, pushing people to go to these vernacular schools. And so yes. What we really need to do is look at the causes, right? What
look
is
at
happening?
The causes, the educational causes. You see, we are so worried about this issue of national unity and vernacular schools. But if we are genuinely concerned about national unity, then we should make these schools such that they are attractive to everyone, like they were at one time. Mm-hmm. Our parents were going to national schools and they were doing very well.
But, you know, politicians are going to keep using this as a point, right? I would say to create tension, you know. And there's a lot of, like, for example, a few years ago, Khairi Jamaluddin, he said that the moment you close down vernacular schools, the other side of the argument is, what about fully residential Malay schools,
yes.
for example? You know, that have to go also, to be
yes.
fair. So, I mean, are we even ready for that? You know, those sorts of things.
No, we are not ready for such changes. I think it's not good to take extreme stands, closing down this and closing down that. There are legitimate expectations now for about six decades. I think we need to walk the middle path. I think what can definitely be done is that the national curriculum of the so-called national schools should actually be revamped to make them more attractive to others and to enhance the teaching of the English language. Not because I'm suffering from colonial mentality, no. Because I think whether we like it or not, English is at this moment a international language. And I would say if Malay kids want to excel in trade and business and international commerce, I think more Malay kids should learn Mandarin. Mm-hmm. China is coming up. India is coming up. And perhaps we should have foreseeability along with Bahasa Melayu as the Bahasa Kebangsaan, as a uniting force indeed. There should also be awareness that the world is changing and therefore we should know the tools of the trade of the world. And I'm very happy actually at the time when I sent my kid to a Chinese school, I didn't have all this trade and commerce in mind, but
that was
30 years ago. But now I realize, hey, that was a good decision. Dana is coming up.
And now your daughter is doing the exact same thing, sending her children to those courts as well.
Yes, indeed.
No regrets. Anything else you'd like to add, Prof?
Yes, I would just like to reiterate what I said earlier, that I think we should be consistent in principle. As you quoted YB Khari Jamaluddin, you're going to close down vernacular schools. Are you also going to close down Malay schools, mm-hmm. which use English? Are you going to close down Malay universities, which use English? Because nationalist sentiment should not be offended simply by the use of the language of those who are citizens, but not be offended by the language of those who were our colonial masters. That's an irony.
Isn't it?
That's an irony, isn't it? So I think we must be consistent in principle. I would be prepared to go along with the argument that no matter what price we have to pay, we must have a medium of instruction from nursery up to university level in our national language. And then we must be consistent. Everyone from the prime minister's children down to the minister and to the bureaucrat's children must go to these schools. I would support that. But then we must be consistent in principle. At the moment, by doing what we are doing, we are creating hierarchies. We are creating caste system. We are creating a group of Malays educated primarily in Malay. We are creating a group of Malays primarily educated in English. This is not good. We are creating structures in society which are actually artificial. So that's what I would like to add. Let's be consistent in principle rather than pick and choose. And maybe finally I could just add one thing. I've always tried to distinguish between racism and racial consciousness. Mm-hmm. Racial consciousness is fine. Some of us want to work for the upliftment of our community or a community. You and I may want to work for the upliftment of the Orang Asli, for example,
sure.
or the upliftment of some other identifiable group, women or divorcees or widows or handicapped. It's fine to work for the upliftment of a section of the population, whether your own or a population, a group to which you do not belong. Racism, on the other hand, is a desire to keep others down, is hatred for the others. We should avoid racism. The idea that this type of school should close down, this should close down, I see in it, sadly, racist sentiments. Not sentiments of nationalism, but racism, because there is no consistency in principle.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should promote the welfare of our community and other communities. That is fine, racial consciousness. But there is no need to be racist in trying to put others down. There are two ways of rising in life. One is that through our struggle, determination, we rise. The other one is to put others down. That is an artificial way of distinguishing yourself because you are better than those you tried to hurt. So I would request those involved in this discussion or dialogue to try to help our young people to receive the best possible education in any way possible.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Shahad Salim Farooqi. He's a professor of constitutional law at the University of Malaya, and he was discussing whether vernacular schools are constitutional. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Law and Behold interviews, you can always search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and on Spotify. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.